Hey, Swisspreneur listeners. Every year, Swisspreneur hosts three scale-up events for its community of founders and investors. In 2024, our first get-together will be the Scale-Up Slopes in the beautiful Locks on March 1st. Join us for a day of skiing or co-working among fellow entrepreneurs and VCs, followed by a flying dinner with a mountain view and a keynote speaker from a well-known Swiss scale-up. The event is open to all entrepreneurs interested in learning about the scale-up journey. Click the link in the show notes and apply to join before January 30th to get an early bird discount. We hope to see you there.
Three of our founding coaches are still with us 8 years later, which is unheard of, certainly not something our competition can say. And these people have really helped bring on other good people, train good coaches.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Mallory, a very well welcome to the Swisspreneur Show. It's a pleasure to have you as our guest today.
Thank you, Sylvan. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're the owner and operator at Velocity. Some people might have already joined you for a class. You're Switzerland's first indoor cycling studio. I think that's a very interesting topic to talk about, how you found your way to Switzerland and how you built a business here. You actually are from the United States originally. I think we hear that with the beautiful American accent. And you studied English and psychology at Cornell before then beginning a career in advertising. What made you choose your area of study back then?
Sure. So I did go to Cornell University. Feels like a long time ago now. At the time, I did have the idea of going into advertising, but I was in the arts and sciences college within Cornell University. And there, they didn't offer the major for marketing or advertising. So I had to go a little bit more general, which I also thought was maybe not a bad idea in case I wanted to change my path in the future.
And is this combination of English and psychology, is that a good setup, a good study to then go into advertising, which you did later on?
I certainly thought so. I was on the account management side of advertising. So I worked for 4 years in New York City before my move here. Mm-hmm. And reviewing the copyright, having the English major background, as well as the psychology to kind of take a step back and look at the overall picture of the messaging we're giving to its receivers, I think it was a good starting place.
To me, it sounds like the perfect combination to really write a persuasive ad, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You said you then moved to Switzerland. That was in 2011. And I wonder what actually made you come here to Switzerland, because that's quite a move from New York City to Switzerland.
It was a big move at the time. Of course, going from such a big city to a city like Zurich was a major adjustment. But I felt like I couldn't pass up on the opportunity to live abroad, and I definitely wanted to try it. But the answer is actually quite a typical answer, which is love. I had met someone actually originally American, but he had been living already in Zurich for a number of years. And we were trying to choose, okay, does he move back to the States or do I come to Switzerland? And I said, yeah, let's go for Switzerland.
Was that a clear decision for you because of the adventure and being outside of the US for a bit? Or was it also a tough negotiation to decide where you want to settle?
It wasn't such a tough negotiation. I think I really wanted that adventure. And I actually grew up skiing since the age of 4. So having the mountains so close by was really appealing for me.
Absolutely. And when you came here in 2011, what were some surprising facts or maybe also culture shocks that you experienced, coming from Big Apple to Zurich?
Sure. I think one of the biggest things was in New York City, of course, everything is just alive all the time, even if it's in the middle of the night. So to come here, even now 12 years ago, I remember the grocery stores back then, even in the middle of the city, would sometimes close at 6 p.m. And that was a major adjustment for me to think about trying to get out of work on time to go grocery shopping.
So it sounds like smaller adjustments, but if you're used to that, you want to get some food and then, oh no, the shop is closed. What do I do now, right?
Yeah, exactly. A lot has changed since then. But it's funny, you realize you appreciate some of the things. Having shopping closed on Sundays is an example. Yeah. It really makes you take the time for yourself, which can be nice.
I agree. As a kid, I hated that. I was always like, now we all have time. Why are the shops closed? But now I actually enjoy that because you can just relax and have peace and quiet.
Exactly.
So depends on the perspective, I guess.
Yep.
After you had your job here in Switzerland that you took on, mm-hmm. you then later on decided to do your MBA. Why mm-hmm. was that the right next career step for you? Did you feel like going back to university and taking the business part on was also an important part?
Sure. Yeah, my job here in Switzerland, when I first arrived, it was a great job. I was head of marketing of a software company. But it was at a certain point, I felt like the growth opportunity had stopped. I was already head of marketing. It was a very small company, small department. The company itself was a little bit stagnant. So I figured, you know, with the time I had, it was a great opportunity to do an MBA program. But an EMBA program, so I did it on the weekends, on the side, that I could, you know, maybe figure out what the next step would be.
And when you started your EMBA, did you already have in mind to eventually start your own business? Or was that something that then evolved over the curriculum of the EMBA?
I think in the back of my head, I knew that it would probably be the launching pad to start my own business. My husband was encouraging me to. He had his full-time stable job, which always helps. And I did come from a family of entrepreneurs, actually. My grandmother and my father had their own businesses. So, yep, that was definitely an inspiration.
So it was sort of in your DNA to become eventually an entrepreneur yourself.
Exactly, yep.
And so you did. In 2015, you then founded and started Velocity. First of all, why cycling? Why was there, you know, the motivation to start and go into cycling?
Sure. My husband and I decided to get into triathlons, actually, right when I first moved here, pretty much. We did the Zurich Ironman in 2013, and then we also did an Ironman in Klagenfurt, Austria in 2015. Training for an Ironman, it's almost like a full-time job at points. You're spending a lot of time on the bike. But of course, in Switzerland, the seasons here don't always allow you to get outside. So we were going to a lot of spinning classes as well as part of our training for these Ironmans.
So it's basically your personal problem to a certain degree where you said, hey, there's a need to have more offerings in terms of cycling classes offered.
Exactly. So we would go to the gym when the weather wasn't nice out to these spinning classes, but they were offered in these bigger gyms because at mm-hmm. the time there wasn't actually any boutique studio offering in Zurich or in all of Switzerland. And the rides, these classes were rather uninspirational, if I have to say so.
Sure.
I hate to say it. But they were, you know, in these brightly lit rooms, windows, the music was rather quiet, and the instruction was very basic, you know, stand up, sit down, go faster.
Not that motivating.
No. And at the same time, SoulCycle, which had started in 2007 in New York City, had really started exploding. So when I would travel back to see friends and family, I would hit up these rides in these dark rooms with these, you know, loud pumping bass music, really inspirational, both physically and mentally, this inspirational coaching. And it was really inspiring. So that's what really sparked the idea.
I love this because usually, you know, we have many entrepreneurs on the show that said, oh, Switzerland always lags a few years behind what you see in the US. This also seemed to be the case right here. You saw SoulCycle taking off in the United States, but there was no such offering here in Switzerland.
Yep, that's true. I did certainly find it to be true in this case that Switzerland was just a little bit behind what was happening in the United States. But at the same time, I found that the ingredients were there for the right kind of recipe for a boutique spin studio. Yeah. I think that, you know, the Swiss appreciate quality. The purchasing power is there. So it felt like, you know, this could certainly be successful.
So imagine you had this idea, right? Hey, this exists in New York. I want to now bring that to Zurich. How do you then go about making the final decision to say, yep, numbers work out. I'm really going to take a leap of faith and start this business myself.
Yeah, I did a lot of research, of course, and had to as part of the MBA program. So my final thesis was, in fact, the business plan for Switzerland's first indoor cycling studio.
Perfect combination,
yeah.
Right?
So I looked at a lot of the different factors, from how many people go to the gym, how many people cycle, even average income, all these things. I think the biggest obstacle that I encountered and had to defend was, you know, what's really the difference if I can go to the gym for, you know, let's say 60 francs a month?
Yeah.
Why am I going to spend 35 francs per ride on your studio? Is it really that much better? Mm-hmm. And that was our biggest challenge in the beginning, is just convincing them to come try it and see the difference for themselves.
And how did you find the answer to that question? Because that is difficult, right? To bring someone to spend a significant higher amount of money for, at least from the outside, of course it's not, but from the outside, a comparable experience. You work out.
So we, one thing we certainly did is we offered an introductory offer. So basically a 2-for-1, which made it a little bit more, approachable in terms of just trying us out. And being the first fitness studio in Zurich, this sort of pay-as-you-go model was very new. So an introductory offer was new, but it seemed to work. It at least got people to come in. In addition to just offering the spin class itself, we also offered all the amenities above and beyond what I think a lot of the big box gyms also offer, which help as well. And of course, convenience of location, being right next to people's offices.
I guess that's really key in the offering, right? That they can just jump out of the office over lunch break and come in for a session or after work.
Definitely.
So you sort of de-risked the offer, right? That people could 2-for-1 just try it out, and really sort of you lowered the risk for them to build trust, I assume, because they didn't know you yet. They didn't know Velocity as a brand yet. So it's very important to de-risk the offering for potentially new clients.
Exactly. Yep. So they could try us out twice, see that the quality was there, maybe even more than once,
right,
and then, you know, rely on, okay, if I buy a 10 pack or a 20 pack even, I can expect that quality.
And then you delivered a fantastic user experience. So then you want the people as clients, I assume. That was the key to then deliver the expectation over the expectation.
Absolutely. That was the goal and the challenge all at the same time.
You're a solo founder. So you started Velocity basically on your own as a founder. Have you ever wished for co-founders along the journey?
So yes and no. I am a solo founder, but we definitely had our experiences along the way, and I certainly had a lot of help as well. Mm-hmm. We did at certain points entertain investment opportunities with different types of partnerships, those who were interested in being very involved in the business and those who were not. And we had our trials and tribulations and some real learning experiences, if I can call it that. Partnerships that never quite went to fruition, but that we explored for a while and had me realize that being a solo founder allowed me to be very flexible, allowed me to move quickly, make decisions fast. Yeah. At the same time, I had a lot of help from, of course, my husband. And eventually, maybe we'll talk about this later, but we did bring on investors, but they're by and large silent investors.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds like a great setup.
Yeah. It works for me and for us. Yeah.
I also want to talk about you being an expat founder. You came from the United States to Switzerland, to Zurich, as we heard. How was that for you, you know, to start a company here? I'm really curious about that experience, because for people, you know, who grew up in Switzerland, they don't get the same experience as you did. So what worked well by launching and founding your company here in Switzerland? And where do we have some homework to do and improve things?
challenge? I would say the biggest challenge for me personally was locating and landing our first location. We looked for a very, very long time. And a lot of the times we had the challenge of, okay, you're not Swiss. You don't necessarily speak the language. Certainly at the time, my German was really not that good. And in addition, an unproven concept here in Switzerland. And we needed some key things in our space. We needed air. We needed lots of water. And we needed soundproofing. So we were a really, really tough sell for landlords, I have to say. But the point of being an expat certainly didn't feel like it helped.
Yeah. How did you then, you know, solve that? Because it's also, again, I guess, here about building trust, you know, saying, hey, I'm in here for the long run. I don't just come and try a business. And if it's challenging or it doesn't work, I move out of the country. How do you build the trust and then eventually made it happen?
Yeah, I think using a lot of the data coming out of the US and certainly at that point, other cities like London or some Singapore, there were a lot of cities that saw a lot of success with this concept. So a lot of documentation to prove that this could be and will be very successful here was really what helped in the end.
One thing in your product, in your offering, is called VeloBoard. I also want to know a bit more about that. Can you talk a bit, what is the VeloBoard? And from our perspective, based on our research, it seems to also be a bit linked to your psychological studies. Please share some insights here.
Exactly. So at Velocity, we offer two types of indoor cycling. One we call VeloBeat, which is really rhythm riding, and a full body workout on a bike, which is very unusual to what was offered here in the gyms. So you're doing push-ups on the bikes. You even do hand weight section. It's riding to the rhythm of the beat, and it can feel like a real party. It's a lot of fun. But we have another type of cycling class that we call VeloBurn. And in our burn rides, we leverage technology. So all the bikes have a computer on them, which people can turn on. And then there's an optional leaderboard. So it's basically a competition upon what we have is in each cycling room, we have two big screens. And people can choose to be on the leaderboard or not. And everyone can designate their own name for themselves on our on their profiles on our website. So it is a little bit anonymous. And you know who you are on the board, and you can actually tell apart the males and the females. So you can see, okay, if you're a female, maybe you're the top female that day, or you're, you know, somewhere in the ranking, you're not last, that can also feel good. And then all of that data, the kilometers you ride, the calories you burn, it's all recorded back to your online profile, whether you've actually chosen to be on the board or not. So this was a sort of a, you know, leveraging technology, using this competition to really motivate people. And of course, I know from both psychology studies and from my Ironman's racing, competition can be a real driver. It can really motivate you. And I think it really encourages people to get the most out of their workouts.
That sounds like an incredible innovation that you brought right there to the cycling experience, but at the same time, from a business perspective, also a bit like a lock-in effect, right? I have my data with you, I have my rides, my calories, etc. That's quite cool because I don't want to lose that, so I continue being a valued customer.
Exactly. Yep. Because if you leave us, you lose that data.
Exactly.
Yep. And people love to really see their progress and, you know, beat themselves from the last time. I mean, the biggest competitor is always yourself.
That's a very smart setup. I love that.
Yep.
So now looking back, Velocity has been around for about 8 years now. And I wonder, you know, just along that journey, what are some of the things that really surprised you during these years?
How important the team is. I think if I were to say the most important thing about Velocity is really our team and how good people beget good people. So I think we were very fortunate to start with some really key people. Actually, three of our founding coaches are still with us 8 years later,
wow.
which is unheard of. Certainly not something our competition can say. And these people have really helped bring on other good people, train good coaches. So it's really created not only a great team at Velocity, but then it also requires a really great community as well.
How do you end up in this position? Because that's very unique. I know the fitness industry a bit, and I know there are high turnovers. You have mm-hmm. coaches, trainers that just change quite regularly. It's just part of the way the business works. Mm-hmm. You do that differently. How did you arrive at this position? Did you put any specific incentives in place, or how do you do that?
We have, without sharing too much. I think they're able to feel ownership in the business. Yeah. They certainly have incentives to see the business do well. But not only the business, but their team specifically. So whether it be the VeloBeat team, the VeloBurn team, they're nice. Invested in that. So they're invested in seeing other coaches perform well also.
I love that because I think, you know, no matter in what industry you are actively operating in, thinking about incentives and how you can actually reward the behavior that leads to what you define as success, that's key mm-hmm. to be aligned in the long run. So you seem to do that very well. I think that's super impressive.
Thanks. We've also just been very fortunate to have some of these people.
And along these 8 years, you started with a studio in Zurich, a very mm-hmm. central location, but then you also expanded. You are now available in Zurich Enge. You are also available in Zug. Mm-hmm. When did you know that it's the right time to expand across multiple locations?
Yeah, we started in Zurich West, which directly next to the Prime Tower, which has been a great location because the Prime, and now we have the Prime Tower too. So we have a lot of offices nearby and a lot of young people living in the area. Mm-hmm. Still, we knew it wasn't downtown Zurich, and we always sort of had our eyes on it. And once we saw the Zurich West studio hit its point of sort of, you know, we're doing break even better, we really felt that a downtown location would be truly successful. Yeah. It was interesting, though. We started looking for a big space in downtown Zurich, which mm-hmm. is not
difficult.
Easy. Not easy at all, especially at the size of space we are, which the Zurich Enge location, which we eventually found, is almost 600 square meters. So it's quite large. Yeah. But we really struggled to find a space like that at an affordable rent. So eventually we actually started looking in Zug. And when we were looking in Zug, we found a location that we quite liked there, right by mm-hmm. the train station as well. And we were just about to sign the lease when the Zurich Enge location approached us. So we were really in this moment of, what do we do? Mm-hmm. You know, do we drop Zug, but then what happens if we don't sign Zurich Enge? Yeah. Then we've lost both. Or do we sign Zug and maybe also Enge at the same time? That's a big bet.
Of course.
In the end, our choice was the big bet.
Did he have any fear that, you know, this might be too much in that specific moment?
I think we felt confident in the potential success of both locations. Mm-hmm. What I think scared us the most is building out two locations simultaneously. Yeah. Which
that's intense.
It was intense. Building studios, especially when you're putting in showers, toilets, huge air systems, soundproofing, it's a lot of work and managing all the suppliers. To do both at once, it was a really busy year.
I can imagine.
Yeah, I'm not sure I saw the sun that summer.
Another question I'm interested in talking about is doing the expansion yourself versus working with franchisees, etc. How did you think about that? Was it ever an option for you to say, hey, we don't do that ourselves, but we actually go more into a franchise system?
We've thought a lot about this, actually, because we have been approached by parties in neighboring cities, let's say Basel, Lucerne, even St. Gallen, some cities on the French side. Mm-hmm. And I think maintaining the soul of Velocity, making sure that the community, the coaches, and everything represents your brand mm-hmm. is so important to us that we're being rather particular on whether we would do that or not. And oftentimes the answer has been no. In addition, having the right location is so key. And sometimes we've had parties approach us with a location that we think, maybe not. It really, location, location, location. We've been close within a, I think, 4-minute walk of any big train station with our studios, which has proven, I think, to be a large part of the success factor.
Absolutely. But with that decision to not go into a franchise system, don't you also limit the potential business growth? I mean, you could just, you know, cash in the fees that you could charge to the franchisees and then have a very, very nice business growth revenue-wise.
Sure. I'm not sure that that's our number one goal, though. I think at the end of the day, building what we've built already in Zurich and Zug with our coach team, but more importantly with the community and the customers we've touched and the lives we've bettered, not only because of, you know, maybe physical improvement, but mentally, or having people feel like they've gained their sense of community at Velocity. That's been our number one goal. So we're rather cautious about risking the sense of, you know, the team and the community we have here at home by expanding further away.
It sounds like de-risking again and taking smart bets.
For us, yep.
And talking about finances, you then opened these two locations, right? In Engen and in Zug. You did that yourself. So I guess you also needed to finance these expansions, because setting up a new location, I guess that's not the cheapest venture to do. How do you go about the financing of your location expansion?
Two at once was, as I said, a big bet. And we did need to bring on financing. We ended up choosing Silent Partners, who, in the, as I said earlier, was the right choice for us. They give us guidance and a lot of advice when needed, but they're not breathing over our shoulders either. And that's been great. They trust us. They're there when we need them. It's really a beautiful relationship, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
How did you find them and then also set that expectation that, hey, we want to call you for help, but we don't want you to micromanage us, for example? Because sometimes this expectation management and having clear roles assigned is where entrepreneurs struggle a bit.
We talked a lot about it with them. And maybe to even go a step back, how we found them is they were Velocity clients.
Amazing. That's the best.
Yep. And they were there very early on. In fact, I think their first ride, we joke about it, they were the only two in there because it was such early days.
So cool.
But we talked a lot about, you know, our expectations early on, because we had already gone through some interesting experience with potential partners who already sort of demonstrated to us what too much micromanaging, too much wanting input would look like. And what I helped as well is that these partners that we took on, Velocity wasn't their first experience. It wasn't their only experience in investment. They have lots of other projects. They kind of know what this already looks like. So Perfect. That helped a lot.
Absolutely. And no need to share that information, but did you then structure that as an equity deal? So they are partners in terms of also owning equity, or more as a loan with a nice interest rate for the investors?
They're equity. Yeah. Okay. So they're also owners.
Perfect. Was a bank loan, for example, also an option that you considered? Because you turned profitable with the first location. I assume that, you know, your track record would be very interesting for a bank to lend you some money for the expansion.
It was something we entertained. At the same time, having partners that would provide support for us as well as be able to grow with us was an interesting idea as well. A bank loan can be very singular, one and done, sure. Whereas these partners shared some of the same visions as we do.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Let's also talk about challenges. And I think it's obvious which one we're going to start first, COVID. The whole fitness sector was basically shut down, so you couldn't take any workouts, you couldn't make any revenue, basically, you know, because you had to shut down and you couldn't charge the class fee. How was COVID for you? How did you navigate that as a business in the moment of uncertainty when this will ever end?
Sure. The beginning of COVID was extremely scary for, I think, everyone. Yeah. There were just so many unknowns at the time. And for us, we stayed as much as we could in constant communication with our teams. So even, you know, the day before we closed, we had a company call, which is unusual in our industry. But we had everyone on a call to say, hey, guys, it seems that the rumor is swirling that we're going to have to close tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Let's talk through this. Let's talk about questions. And then we continuously had these calls. Eventually, they moved to Zoom, of course, to keep the team feeling, you know, of course, that we're together, that we're in this together, even if we didn't have all of the answers. Mm-hmm. So we really kept in constant communication, lots of emails. And in addition to that, we also tried as much as we could to keep our community with us. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of other fitness studios go pretty radio silent in terms of their social media or any other channels that they had. Mm-hmm. Whereas we kept posting, we kept doing as much as we could to kind of keep our community together, because we didn't want to just count on them being with us when we reopened one day.
Of course. That makes a lot of sense from the community aspect. Mm-hmm. How did the business part look like? Because from one day to the other, like, their revenue basically went to zero, right?
Exactly. I think that, you know, the first thing we had to figure out was Kurzarbeit, as it's called in German. So we, of course, wanted to make sure our employees were taken care of first and foremost. Once that was figured out, which took a little while, but not too long, mm-hmm. We then looked at managing with our landlords and negotiating on that front. And by and large, our landlords were somewhat supportful in covering part of the rent while we were closed. And then finally, in the second lockdown, the government was willing to also provide a certain percentage of revenue loss, which also helped. So those were sort of the three big steps we took in that order.
So that then allowed you to stay in business, because otherwise, you know, if you have a landlord demanding the full rent, no revenue coming in, you could not sustain that for too long, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And luckily, they recognized that, at least to a degree.
Perfect. Yeah. That's good to hear that you can talk and find solutions together. Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about the business model. You said, you know, there's a fee per class basically at around 35 Swiss francs, but the space per class per se is limited due to the nature of the room and the capacity. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of also limiting your business potential that you say, hey, you know, you don't have like a traditional gym where you just sell memberships and maybe people just don't show up. Mm-hmm. Is the, you know, class fee basically and the limited space also a limiting factor from a business and revenue perspective?
It is. It is. I'm certainly not going to be shy about answering that. We can only fit so many bikes in a room. And we also don't want to pack them in there and lose the experience for our customers. So, of course, there's the opportunity of adding more classes to the schedule. You can imagine, though, a ride at 3 p.m. is not going to do well as 7 p.m. We have thought about dynamic pricing. Mm-hmm. It's coming a little bit, certainly in other countries. At the same time, I think we've decided against it at this point because we don't want to have velocity be something that people are priced out of. No. That's just not something we want to be known for, nor something, you know, we want to do to our community. We want to be fair. So those who can book a week out when the class is released on our website schedule, those who are fast, they get it.
Which is also nice, right? It adds this fear of missing out if mm-hmm. the supply is limited.
Exactly. And I think it's a great thing about the boutique fitness studio model is mm-hmm. you are signed up, you're committed, unlike the gym where you would just walk in or not. Right. That commitment really helps people to stay, you know, committed to their fitness routine.
Yeah. You got to be there at that time, otherwise mm-hmm. people are going to ask questions. Mm-hmm. A last thing in terms of challenges I want to address is you mentioned there are now more competitors. Although you were the first cycling studio in Switzerland, mm-hmm. now the market has caught up a little. So there are more competitors in the market. How do you think about them? Is that something that you worry and say, hey, there's like another cycling studio opening in Zurich and now we sort of have to share the market? Or how do you see the competitor situation?
Sure. I think originally it's also a compliment to us to have people look at us and maybe say, okay, they're making it work. We can make it work too. And of course, it's a classic example that you study in business school. If you have a block full of, let's say, Chinese restaurants in a city, people know that you know they should go to that block on that street to get their Chinese food. So the more awareness that was built around indoor cycling and even boutique fitness, the more it can also help you. It's not just a negative. Of course, there are some negative aspects of it. But I think in the end of the day, we choose to believe in ourselves and believe in what we do, and that there's room enough for everyone. So we just focus on what we do and doing it well and let the others do what they're going to do.
So would you say that the positive for now overweights in terms of, you know, having competitors, that they help you grow the market and there's enough share for everyone?
I would say so, actually. Would. And there's certainly been articles written about the Zurich indoor cycling scene. Not necessarily highlighting one studio over the other, but it's certainly become something that Zurich's actually known for now.
Nice. And you actually started that trend here in Zurich. That's fantastic. How does that make you feel?
Proud, of course. Very proud.
Very nice. So I also want to talk a bit about the future. So you have been in business for more than 8 years. You expanded geographically. What is in the works for the immediate future? Do you plan to open more studios or what have you planned?
We're not saying no to new opportunities. That's for certain. But we've learned a lot along the way. As I mentioned, location, location, location. So we wouldn't just open anywhere. And we're also very cognizant of keeping our team and the team feeling together. And I do think expanding too quickly can get in the way of keeping that core team with you. So we have ideas. I'm not going to share them, but we're going to be very, very, very selective on them.
Is going outside of Switzerland in terms of an expansion also something that you think about?
No, not at the moment.
And just to follow the vision, the mission that you have with Velocity, what's your goal? Do you say, hey, we want to be a very profitable company and, you know, make everyone happy, including the silent partners? Or would you even consider eventually selling, you know, your company one day if the offer is right?
The goal to sell is not there per se. We would be quite happy keeping it within the ownership structure that it has now. It can certainly be other people's goals and probably is for some of our competitors, but not for us. For us, the ultimate goal is bettering people's lives. Truly it is. Whether that's the employees on our team or the clients that we have. The more we can have great experiences in the studios, the more people we can touch, the better for us.
Yeah, that's a wonderful mission to follow. And what's next for you personally, Mallory?
Sure. For those just listening, they probably can't see that I have a big belly at the moment. So personally, I'm 8 months pregnant and starting that new chapter of my life will also be a big challenge for sure. It's also had me really reconsider the organization of the company. Really grow some people into different roles, which I think the timing on that was actually perfect. We've had some people with us for a while who are really ready to step into bigger managerial positions. So that's been really fun to have them, to already have them step into that. And we've been doing a lot of transitioning recently.
Wonderful. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Amazing to see you here, you know, so vivid and actively sharing about all you built. It's amazing to have you here. So to wrap up the conversation, I have some rapid fire questions for you.
Sure.
I give you a short question and you have to answer in one sentence.
Okay.
Let's go. What personal cycling record are you most proud of?
Improving my second Ironman cycling time by 2 hours.
Wow. That's a lot. Wow. When you're cycling outside the studio, what bike are you on?
I'm on a specialized, which has gotten me through 2 Ironmans without a single flat tire.
Wow, impressive. Since you're an expat here in Switzerland, I gotta ask, Switzerland or the United States?
Switzerland, hands down.
Very clear choice.
Yep.
And what do you miss the most about the US and what do you love the most about Switzerland?
Convenience in the US.
Yeah.
In addition to seafood, good seafood.
Yeah, fair.
Switzerland, the mountains, the cleanliness, the organization, quality of life in general.
Perfect. Mallory, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure to have you as a guest. All the best with the newborn soon and of course also the business. I'm sure we're going to see much more from you in the future.
Thank you, Sylvain. It's been a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.